Hi, Onyx family. Welcome to the Onyx Life, where change comes with challenge. Every episode, we try to take you on a journey moving you from the struggle life to the Onyx life, creating happy homes and financial empires, and of course, exploring the lighter side of life. My name is Murthel.
And I'm Rita. Today, we're going to be talking about Sharp Objects, the show that just premiered on HBO. It's a limited series, and we're going to be talking about it on today's segment of Rita Reviews. So today, as I said in the intro, we're going to be talking about Sharp Objects. This is a TV adaptation or HBO adaptation of a book written by Gillian Flynn, who also wrote Gone Girl. Many of you are familiar with that. It is a very interesting show. So when I heard about it, I said, I need to watch this because the last series I saw on HBO that I thought was like, wow, was Big Little Lies. Remember that one?
Mm-hmm.
That one was really good. And if we were doing our podcast at that point, I would have definitely talked about that. But they are having a season two, so we will be talking about that when that premieres. So Sharp Objects, the main star is Amy Adams, and we have Patricia Clarkson, Chris Messina. Some of you may know who these people are, especially Amy Adams. And I wasn't sure when I first started. I wasn't sure that I could see Amy Adams in that role. I've always seen her as playing very nice roles. I don't know what some of the other projects she's been in the last few years, but I do remember her, especially in that movie, where she was trying to emulate Julia Childs with her cooking. Do you remember that movie?
No.
That one was, that was good. It's just that I didn't necessarily feel like, you know, I was like, oh, okay, it's all right. I wasn't that impressed with that movie. So I was just thinking, I don't know. I know she was in American Hustle, and she did play a, as in Wikipedia's words, seductive con artist. But I don't know. I just didn't think this could be that believable with her playing this tough, gritty role. And boy, was I wrong, because from the moment she came on the screen, it's been very captivating. She's done an excellent job. Her acting has been very understated and very nuanced. I know that a lot of critics say that, but when I think of nuanced, I think of people who are able to capture not just the big emotion, but the little things that people do, and the body language, the little body language that we have, the very slight facial expressions or finger gestures, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
What that did jump out at me, though, is that, and I don't think this is her, I feel like the writing itself is really trying to make her over the top, like tough and gritty. In the sense where, so in the beginning, you know, we just constantly see her drinking. And by the way, spoiler alert, so don't listen to this podcast if you don't want any spoilers, because we will be talking about some of the things in this episode. But from the beginning, she's just drinking a lot of alcohol. She's smoking up a storm. She's drinking while she's driving. Then she gets to this hotel when she's sent back, you know, to her hometown. And she's bathing in this dirty bathroom in the hotel, in the motel, really. And I'm like, okay, guys, like, I get it. She's tough. She's hardcore. She's gritty. She's dirty. But like this dirty bathroom, like that was over the top for me. But let me back up a bit and just talk about what the show is actually about. Just in case you don't know, Amy Adams, she plays Camille Preaker, who returns to her hometown of Wind Gap, Missouri, to cover the murders of two preteen girls. She also is, the dynamic is that she has a strained relationship with her mother and her stepdad, and she has a half-sister who's basically leading a double life while she's down there. Her half-sister looks like she's, somewhere in her teens. So that's really the gist of the story. So she's down there. This first episode, it takes place with her just getting down there. And of course, I feel kind of like sometimes this is also cliche with shows, the whole small town, everyone's quiet, everyone's miserable, no one wants to see reporters. I mean, they always act like everybody in a small town is just like anti-journalist and anti, you know, Joy. They were just like, everyone's just so miserable and everyone's drinking. Like, I think that, and then I noticed in shows that when they talk about people in, like, let's say suburbia, everyone's like the Stepford Wives. So I feel like there's this exaggeration that the media does. Yeah. Right. So we get that in Wind Gap. We get a rundown town with rundown mansions with eccentric acting people who basically live to smoke and get drunk and, you know, murders happen.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm really enjoying the show so far. It kind of reminds me of when I was doing my studies, when I was doing my marriage and family therapy degree. One of the things that they would do is they would try to expose each clinician to various scenarios that we may not have been exposed to. You know, if you grow up in a country town, you generally don't know the culture of a big city. If you grew up in a big city, you generally don't know the culture of a country town. So when you were saying, hun, that they typically show that this is a small town, they always show them in the same light, I was kind of like just lost because I don't know what light that is because I don't know small town mid-America.
Well, I think that we live in a small town. And I think that we live in mid-America.
I'm not sure. I mean, this is like really small town. This is like one street small town. And I think ours is more.
Hello.
Ours is more like suburbia.
I think where
we live is more suburbia.
I think where we live, but I think the town in and of itself could qualify maybe not as small as Wind Gap. But it's pretty small.
But the point that I was making is that the technique that they were using is to kind of expose. And so it kind of reminded me of that. I was like, I'm excited because I get to be exposed to a scenario that I didn't grow up in. I grew up in big city. I grew up in Toronto. And I grew up in a very sheltered home. So a lot of storylines and a lot of people's experiences, I am not so familiar with them. A little bit more in counseling sessions, but for the most part, some of the same people working in a big city, some of the same type of people would come through. And so
this is really... Exactly. That's my point. My point is that they exaggerate these these things where, in fact, every city has a segment of all these types of populations.
Yeah,
we lived in big cities and it looked, the part of the city looked just like Wind Gap. Then you go to another part, there's suburbia. Another part, there's downtown.
But I just love, I love being exposed to the culture. I love being exposed to different family themes. I love being exposed to the different dysfunctions that we all kind of share, no matter where you come from. And clearly, I'm looking forward to seeing how this plays out. Why is she always drinking? Why is she has this dependency on alcohol? Where is this coming from? I mean, there's some clues that it's coming from the mother, but, you know, I'm just really excited about that.
I don't think it's coming from the mother. Well, I think it's coming from some sort of traumatic experience that happened in the woods with those boys that we have not seen yet. So I'm just guessing.
Right.
And also, most likely her mother, like a lot of people, did not handle whatever happened.
She's not handling well because the mom is drinking too.
She's delusional. Like she's off in fairyland with like dancing. It's just strange. It's like she's from another era. It's like the mother is stuck like somewhere in the 30s. Like even her outfit looks like it's from the 30s and her hair.
But there are some characters that are interesting. Like one of the gentlemen that she interviewed early, he's a little bit off.
The father of one of the
missing girls. Yeah, he's a little bit off. So in a sense, it really leaves you on the edge of your seat, sort of like starting to give an analysis, your own personal investigation as you're watching the show. Who did it, basically? So it's sort of like a mystery. Who did it?
It's a mystery who did it.
And then it's a drama as well.
Getting into the complexity of her character.
Relationships and what
You know what? It's just that I feel like it's very insulting to a lot of people who live in small towns and in certain parts of America. It's just like...
You're really on that, aren't you?
No, it's just... It bugs me because it's like not everyone there is just miserable wanting to just get out. Mm-hmm. Some people like the simple life, you know?
I agree, but I think one of the things that she's trying to depict is that small town America is very suspicious of big town America. they're very suspicious of the city person. And that plays in so many movies that I have to believe that there's some truth to it. All they're doing is they're probably just exaggerating it. But there has to be some truth to that. And if they're telling the story from her perspective, then you're not going to see behind the scenes before she walks into the bar. You're not going to see how everyone's laughing and talking with each other. You're going to see how everybody's just sort of like quiet because mm-hmm. they're showing from her perspective. So I can see where they're coming from with this. And there has to be some truth to it about, you know, the distrust that we have in America right now towards one another because, you know, one is from big town, one is from small town.
You're absolutely right. I have to agree that based on the climate right now, there are politicians who are really playing off of this small town versus big town America. Mm-hmm. So I just remember years ago, and I really don't want to talk a lot of politics right now, but I do remember years ago when a certain politician said, this is real America here. And she was talking about somewhere like in the Midwest or something, mm-hmm. some small town. And a celebrity who was from New York City said, oh, okay, so 9/11 didn't happen in real America. And immediately this other politician had to bite her words because it was like, there is no real America and there's fake America over here.
Right.
There's different sides of America.
Right.
And so, like you're saying, I do like seeing another climate, another sort of, I don't know, way of living.
Another narrative.
I like that. Yeah. I do like that. I think that it's definitely has to be some sort of an exaggeration because it wouldn't be entertaining
sure.
if it wasn't. But I think it's good. But man, it's like when problems are portrayed in these shows, I mean, it's just like mm-hmm. to the extreme. And, you know, at the end of the episode, we saw that she had some sort of self-harm issues.
Right. And that's probably where the cutting comes in.
Yeah, but again, this was
sharp objects, I'm sorry.
Exaggerated.
Right.
That I don't even want to give it away.
Right.
But it was so exaggerated that I was like, what? Okay, mm-hmm. well, I mean, clearly this is just entertainment. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we're going to go with it. But other than that, like when the show started, what I loved was the cinematography of showing us what the town was like.
Oh, yeah.
And through different clues, through posters and things like that, you were able to see what the time frame was in that beginning.
Right.
And then that smooth transition to then the current time. It was really, really good. And the girl that they got to play Amy Adams as a young girl, mm-hmm. her name is Sophia Lillis. Oh, wow. She looks just like her. I mean, just like her.
Really, really good.
The eyes.
Casting. Good casting.
Really good casting on that. So mm-hmm. I was thinking, wow, this is very eerie how similar they look. Mm-hmm. They're probably not related at all.
They did a really good job in depicting, I would say, the early 90s, that era.
Right. And because they keep jumping back right. to that, mm-hmm. you know, they basically go between both times. Mm-hmm. You're able to see the, you know, the difference in clothes and all sorts of things.
Right.
You know?
Right. Posters of Bush mm-hmm. In the election where there was Bush against Al Gore. Right. And
but they even had a Clinton poster.
Yeah.
Not Hillary, Bill.
Like a Bill Clinton poster. But it was like all shredded.
Right.
So it shows that this town seemed to have been, you know, there's a political story behind the town.
Right.
And they're showing that divide as well. So it was just very interesting.
I did notice that as for minorities, I only saw that in the very beginning when they were just doing the pan of the city.
Right, right.
I don't see any major representation, characters with as minorities.
I agree. I only saw minorities in the very beginning and then that was it.
Right.
And that's interesting because that could also be telling a story that at the time, in the beginning, when the opening scene came, at that time, there may have been a lot of minority representation. But by the time we got to, which was, it seems as though it's over 10 years.
Over 10 years. Because she's like a full.
She's a full adult, right? So it has to be over 10 years.
I would more like say like 14, 15.
Maybe 14, 15 years. Within that time frame, the things have changed. And that town has changed and not as many representations of of people of color. So it's a very interesting perspective. Have you analyzed the movie and behind the scenes?
One thing though is that I find that a lot of HBO shows recently, not Insecure, because Insecure is clearly that's African American, but like Big Little Lies, you know, Now Sharp Objects, Game of Thrones, they tend to be predominantly white. Mm-hmm. And you know, I guess that's portraying like society, like there's this, you know, segments like either it's almost all black like on Insecure or almost all white on mm-hmm. Sharp Objects. We live in the South, and so for me, I feel like it's not a real representation of the mm-hmm. South, because this is where you're going to find the most black people. I mean, there's black people in this whole country, but the greatest concentration is here in the South. Mm-hmm. So I feel like these shows that are set here should be showing more.
But which black shows are you people. Talking about? Because the show that we're talking about is set in the Midwest.
Midwest, but close to the South. It's like right next to Tennessee where they are.
I still could see that as all white, because even in the South, you go into certain pockets of, let's just say Tennessee, certain pockets of Alabama, you're going to see all white. And then there's certain pockets where you can see all black. And the challenge is that in many...
I've never been somewhere where it's just all black or all white. I mean, unless you're going so far, like in the country, I mean, really deep in the country.
I have seen that. Where? I have seen towns that we have driven through when we're driving through.
Marcel, you can't really say a town that you just drove through.
But this is the kind of town that we're talking about in this movie. It's a very small town. And I have gone through towns where it is literally all white.
I mean, maybe you're right. Maybe.
Yeah, so I can see all white.
I know. I'll concede. I don't know.
I mean, you know, Atlanta, it's like the city part, a lot of black people. But you see sprinkles of white people over here and there. But the one place that I have seen a very homogeneous crowd is really small town America.
I just don't think that, you know, you or I have really seen a lot, so I'll leave that up to them.
But that's where a lot of ignorance can come in, when you do have homogeneous crowds that are just not really exposed to others, and that's kind of that's almost like paper to fire. It's what sets ablaze so many of the tension in America, because there's not enough rubbing shoulders with one another to get to know one another, and then you know, these things can happen.
Anyhow, well, I do think though. Really... Now, one thing I have noticed as well though is that there are a lot more women starring in roles on HBO.
Right.
Take Insecure and Big Little Lies and mm-hmm. Sharp Objects. These are female-driven roles.
Right. And even The Handmaid's Tale is very female-driven mm-hmm. narrative.
That's true.
And in Sharp
Objects... Which we'll be talking about Thursday, because the finale is Wednesday and it's going to be amazing.
Right. When it comes to Sharp Objects, like, it just began, but the main characters is Camille Preaker, Emma, and Adora, which is...
Females.
These are all females. And mm-hmm. those are the main characters that they're really focusing on. The mother and the two sisters, like half-sisters. Those are the main characters. And they don't really... Like, the father is really like a side...
The stepdad, yeah.
The stepdad is really side. The sheriff and the investigator, they're sides as well. I think
the investigator, though, is going to be pretty prominent.
He might be, but they don't really show him. Like, in a lot of the websites that I've been looking at to prepare for this, they're not really showing him as like a main character, so...
Well, I see
it. It seems as though,
you know, when you look up on it, he's further down. He's like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, number 6.
Right. But I'm like, if you look on like Wikipedia, which is generally Wikipedia will be like, that tries to be like one of the main websites to show the movie. Mm-hmm. They don't even have any other characters except for the female characters, which means that what they're saying is that the main characters are all female.
You know, I also want to refer to Killing Eve. The one I had talked about just yesterday with Sandra Oh mm-hmm. and, you know, her nemesis, female driven again.
Why do you think that this is happening? Why do you think that there is this focus on the female narrative at this point in time?
I think that there are more women at the table mm-hmm. creating roles. And for many years, we have fought
right.
to have more roles that, you know, reflect things that we are going through.
Sure.
And I think it's just our time, you know, and I think there's still a lot of roles that men have. But I think that...
I love it. I mean, it tells her story.
Yeah.
It tells the female perspective, and we need more of that, as we do need more perspectives of other cultures. I think that once we begin to open up the broad narrative of more people, man, there could be a revolution and a resurgence of energy back to cinema and to television and media, because now we're breaking out. We're telling another story.
Mm-hmm.
But I like it. I really like getting into these themes.
I do too. I really do. And I like just the setting of this Wingate, Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
It reminded me so much of the South. I almost forgot that it is, you know,
right,
the Midwest over Midwest. There. But like South Midwest.
I don't know. I don't want to like weigh this podcast down with too many deep issues. But do you think that there's any connection with the Me Too movement? Do you think that, you know, there's sort of like a pushback of the oppression and a lot of the garbage that has been in the industry?
Probably. I mean, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that, like I said, I think there's still a lot of roles that go to men first and
mm-hmm.
That are made around men and for men. And
sure.
I think that what we're seeing now is definitely more of a balance. It just so happens that a lot of the really good shows right now
mm-hmm.
are these female led ones, but there are also always men working on these projects too.
Sure.
So that, you know, that means
a
lot.
To give a good perspective. I like it. And one of the reasons why I like it is because movies can be very therapeutic.
Mm-hmm.
As you watch in the therapy session, what I would do, I do something like where I'll tell my story
mm-hmm.
to normalize whatever someone is going through. And that you don't even have to, just doing that in and of itself could be very therapeutic because the people that are in front of you, the clients, they will say to themselves, wow, I'm not alone. And so when your story is told, whether it's in a therapy session or whether it is on the big screen, you get the sense like, I'm not alone. Like I can identify with the character. I can identify with this. And there can be a lot of healing that takes place. And so that's why I think it is so important to tell not just his story, but her story, because there's so many women that need to feel connected. They're silent and they're suffering silently. And when they could just in a safe place, this is a safe environment when you turn on your television and you're just in your dark room and you're in your own home, and just to watch a character not just go through it and you can identify with the pain, but in some cases that person can show ways in which they have overcome
mm-hmm.
and that could give people a pathway to healing.
Well, I'm hoping that's what we see with this series, that we see some healing. I have not read the book
mm-hmm.
and I'll read the book after this.
Sure.
Because I don't want it to, you know, mess up. I want to look forward to what I'm going to see every week.
Exactly.
But other observations of this show, I think that the young people, the interesting part for me is that the young people look like they still are like maybe 20 years behind in their dress.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, I thought that was kind of weird. They
yeah.
don't look like what people
what we
now.
Have around, like 2018,
right.
While the older ones do.
Right. They're still wearing or using the same roller skates that we did back in the day.
Right.
They're still like their shorts, their shirts, and
their socks,
is this,
everything. Like,
yeah, is
everything
this reflective
is
of like they're because they're stuck in this small town. They don't
mm-hmm.
know or
well,
what?
What's interesting is that the main character, one of the reasons why she is dressed probably more modern is because she went away to the big city. So
yeah.
you're making a good point. Maybe they're stuck a little
mm-hmm.
bit
mm-hmm.
and they're not.
I think so. And
but that's I don't know, like that's another thing I don't know about small town, but I feel like the age of internet would cause everybody to be able to share in even the subcultures and the, you know,
right.
the subcultures of what it means to be a
right.
youth,
because it is,
you don't have to be in the big town anymore, you have your internet.
Yeah, because unless I saw wrong, she is using like a smartphone. So
right.
it is
yeah.
now. She's driving an old car, but
I mean, even right now, even I watch some YouTube channels with Africa. They're even up to date. You know what I'm saying? In some of the countries, they're up to date with the dance, they're up to date with the style, and they know the music.
Mm-hmm.
And you see these videos coming out and you know it's like a little country because they're dancing on dirt.
Mm-hmm.
And they're up to date. So it's sort of like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe your technique of trying to
keep it small town, right, by not making the youth too modern, I guess.
Right. You're overdoing it.
Yeah. Yeah. And then another thing, too, is that there's so much smoking. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. Is it just big city? But did people not get the memo? I thought smoking was going down. But I don't know. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, everybody was smoking, from the young people to the old, mm-hmm, people. And I kind of feel like, I feel that young people nowadays are
healthy,
way more health conscious, and they're more into activism and all sorts of stuff.
Don't eat animals and vegan. And
so that's a little bit behind, too, that they went, oh, let's go sneak out to have a smoke. Like, that's like 80s,
right,
you know?
Right.
So, and 80s and like 70s, 60s. So to me, there's a really like juxtaposing between modern and, mm-hmm, like behind. I don't know if this is all, I mean, I'm sure everything is intentional. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it does seem a little bit backwards. Like, oh, all we have to do now is to smoke here. Like, not in the age of internet.
Now, to talk about movies versus TV series.
Mm-hmm.
I really like movies. And the reason why I really like movies is because there is a conclusion. And
there is a conclusion with TV series.
Well, the thing about it is that they have to drag it out for a while for them to be able to keep the series going. If it's going to go 6 series, 7 series, 8 series, you still don't get results. Like in a movie, you will find out within a 2-hour span,
like,
who actually killed the person, what happened to the missing person, and everything. And my challenge, and this is just my challenge, I'm not saying anything is wrong with it, it just, it is what it is, and they have to make these things. My challenge is that I know for a fact that they're going to drag this thing out potentially for years. And I will not find out who kidnapped the girls, what happened to the girls. And I don't, that's part of the reason why sometimes I can't hang in there with some of these shows, because there's no resolve.
Well, I think that you definitely have to have patience. But if you enjoy watching good content and watching it from week to week, for me, I love series because you can find one good movie and then go months before you find another good
movie.
That
is so true.
So I like having these series. But what I do like is when each season is self-contained, meaning you get answers. So take Big Little Lies. Mm-hmm. At the end of it, we saw what happened. Handmaid's Tale, it actually ended where the book ended. Season 2 is just completely now their creative decision.
Right.
But you know, you get some resolving, then you get new answers or new questions. And I mean, I like that because, mm-hmm, I think that you were going to lose people if they didn't get some sort of resolve,
right,
with something.
And I can appreciate that. It's just, you know, and you made such a good point that there's just not enough. I wish that some of the TV series, because some of the TV series are hot and they are much better than the movies. And if only they could have more movies, like the writers who create these TV series, I wish there was more of them doing movies. Because then it would be more my style of entertainment, where it's at the end, it is resolved. I know everything. I can sigh a relief and move on. You know, it's almost like sports. One of the things, when my team is playing, like Toronto Raptors, when my team is playing, I can't watch it. I don't like tension. I don't want that tension to be unresolved.
Mm-hmm.
And I just can't take it. But I will watch every other team and enjoy it tremendously.
Well, I think it
shows
that, yeah, that is you. You're impatient.
Maybe it's something, but I just can't take it. I would rather just be relaxed, have a great day, finish up everything, and then move on with my life. I don't know.
I love it. I love having something to look forward to in the sense of that, not like in life. There's way more to life than
right,
shows.
Right,
but
right,
for that, I look forward to it. I think it's just great, especially when, you know, when that series ends, boom, something else is on. That starts up and I'm just like, ooh, yay, now we get to enjoy weeks of this next show. So, mm-hmm, I love it. This whole concept of limited series and these shows, it's just a breath of fresh air. Because if all I had was network TV and movies, oh my goodness, it would be so boring. Now, I love to read, so I still have books, but not, mm-hmm, everybody's a reader. So, you know, for those who are not a reader, it would just be choosing between, you know, formulaic, cliche, laugh track shows.
Right.
But not every one of them, because, you know, I did love certain things like The Office. Whenever I want to laugh, I just go there. I could see an episode 20 times and still laugh. I just love that. Love that. Love it. Love it.
Right.
Anyways, more about sharp objects, though. I think that what I like is that we are now we have several ideas why the author named it sharp objects, but we don't know.
Especially with the clue that we saw at the end,
right?
When she was in the bathtub,
right?
There's a clue that is obvious that sharp objects is going to play a huge role in her personal life,
right? You know, but are we going to see other things? You know, are we going to see? There's so many questions that are unfolding with no answers right now.
Mm-hmm. And of course, it's the beginning.
Of course, you know. But I think that I think everybody is really doing well in their roles.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that I think the series is going to do really well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that to me, this reminds me a lot of Big Little Lies. And what I liked about Big Little Lies was that we saw a whole nother culture. I think that was more like Northern California, rich, and, you know, almost all the characters. So I love that the care and the detail.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so what I'm saying is that the location, the clothes, the houses, everything is such a huge part of the show. It's almost like they're their own characters.
Right.
You know, that, you know, what's sad to me, though, and this is what I'm getting at, is alcohol is so prevalent.
Right.
Now, we're not talking about, you know, for people
casual
who,
or social drinking.
Yeah. We're talking about heavy, heavy drinking where
like
I felt like alcohol should have its own credits.
She's drinking a lot of vodka. A lot of vodka.
Well,
I think that's her choice.
There was Jim Beam.
And whiskey at the bar, but her choice of alcohol is vodka.
Mm-hmm.
She'll drink anything. She drinks the vodka straight from the bottles, and then she pours vodka into water bottles, I guess, when she doesn't want
people
to know that she's drinking a second time.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's clearly going to go into alcoholism, and that is a coping mechanism.
Yeah.
But the main coping mechanism, I get the sense that they are going to start shifting towards at some given point in time, hence the title Sharp Objects. They gave us a clue in her body, and the spoiler alert, so if you
No, don't say what it is.
Don't say? Okay.
No.
Well, her body's cut up, but I won't say what.
How?
Yeah.
Right.
Her body's cut up, and so clearly there's some cutting involved, and that seems to be really big right now as far as I'm seeing this in the school system. I'm seeing a lot of cutting going on, and I don't know if this is part of the reason why they are pushing the show to address the issue of dealing with pain and cutting. And so that's another, just from my perspective as, you know, someone that likes to look at these kind of themes, I'm just really interested in how they're going to portray it. Are they going to address the modes behind why people cut? All the kind of stuff, like just in a creative way. I don't think they're going to go deep in any sense and throw up definitions and all sorts of stuff and open up, you know, the DSM. But, you know, I'm interested to see how they're going to portray it and if we're going to learn, you know, certain things from that.
I think that with the experience that you've had, especially as being a pastor and a counselor, I think that, and you have had friends as well. We both have had friends where there have been traumatic situations that people have gone through and the parents have not handled it in the right way, which has perpetuated the trauma, increased the pain, and we have seen people turn to alcohol or self-harm or these other things. I do think that nowadays people are self-harming for even less pain than before. Like,
and sometimes you don't always understand why they're doing it.
No, you don't. Yeah. And I hate to say less pain, meaning because you can't really quantify pain, but I'm just saying that I think some people think you need extreme situations.
Right.
But now people are coping with that, with everything, stress from school, stress with friends.
Right.
I mean, there's so many different things and you never know who's going through it.
Right.
But I do think that the dynamic between mother and daughter is really being explored here.
Mm-hmm.
And like right now, we have no clue about her father. Where did he go?
That's true.
What happened
with
him?
They haven't even touched that.
Right. And so, man,
this
narrative of absent fathers is just, oh my goodness, it's just so much.
Yeah. Okay.
But I love seeing the dynamic between children and parents. That's why I loved Grey's Anatomy for so long, because it was her tension with her father and her mother. And now seeing, like, with this show, I do like seeing that and exploring it, because it's real. There are so many people that we know who have been abused or raped or something, or molested. And they go to their mom, and it's like, you know, it's their mom's boyfriend.
Right.
And the mom doesn't want to believe them, kicks them out.
But I get the sense that this character is like that. She's very, like, dismissive of her daughter.
It's saying, don't embarrass me.
Right.
You know, she's saying that when you're here, you know, you're my daughter. And the woman is like, well, I'm not a child. She's like, no, when you're back home
in this town,
you are known as my daughter.
So watch what you do. Watch what you say. Watch, you know, and just, but just her demeanor just reminds me of that mother that a child goes to her and says, mom, this thing happened. And she just dismisses it for the boyfriend or for the love interest.
We know of a lot of people, and you think to yourself, why doesn't this parent believe their child? Why doesn't this mother believe their daughter? Why are they always saying, no, you're making this up, or you're trying to embarrass me, or you just don't like my boyfriend, or you just don't like your cousin or whatever it is.
Or you're a little whore.
Right. Or they start blaming, you're a whore. You must have started it. You did something to provoke this. And it goes on and on and on. And
but I feel like that's a part of the cycle. I feel like predators, they can evaluate a situation fairly quickly and know that not only which victims they can victimize, but which victims' families will not show the kind of support. They analyze these things very quickly. And so they choose their victims based on that. If they know that that mother is a very weak person, they will start a relationship with her. If they see that the daughter is a certain personality type, you know, he knows that he can isolate that child. And so there's a lot of just really disturbing things about.
Well, you know, this it topic. Reminds me of the situation that I had when I was younger. I was at a lock-in. And for those of you that don't know what a lock-in is where, you know, you go to a, usually like it's like a gym or someplace like that. And they basically lock you in. And then you have like the sleepover, and it's usually like a church event or a school event or some type of group. And I was with my church. This is back in Los Angeles. And while I was there, these two guys who were older than me, though there was a lot of people there. There had to have been like 50 people there from all, you know, from the...
And it was in a gymnasium?
It was in a gym. And there were adults who were there who were supposed to be monitoring. And then there was a range of ages. Now, there weren't like young kids there, but they were more like maybe junior high to high school.
Okay. Maybe. And you, so you were in junior high?
What? I feel like I was in... no, I think I was like a freshman or a sophomore in high school.
Oh, okay.
So while I was there, these two guys who, they, you know, for years, they've always were saying certain things. Saying sexual things. I got, you know, prank calls, you know, different things like that. And I always ignored it. In this day and age, though, with this Me Too generation, oh my goodness, it would not stand. There would be such a different way to handle it.
Right.
But back then, I was just like, I kind of felt like, oh, well, I have to go through this. And I just basically tried to ignore it. Although they made, every time I got around them, I felt nervous. I felt uncomfortable. It was not flattering. It just felt scary to me, but I had to be around them because for a while we all went to the same school, and then I switched schools, not because of them, because I just went to another school, but these people went to my church. So I, you know, I was there with them for years at church.
Right.
So basically we're at this lock-in, and the two guys decide, now one had a basketball, and one decided to say, hey, let's go outside. Now, we're not allowed to go outside. We're supposed to be, you know, locked in. But somehow they found a way to go out. So they're trying to drag me out. Now, I want everyone to keep in mind here. I'm in high school. I am sheltered. I don't do anything with anyone.
Right.
You know, I'm a virgin.
You're not the one that went clubbing and partying.
I don't go clubbing. I never... tasted,
never drank, nothing. Never smoked, never did drugs.
Had a, by that time, I never had a boyfriend.
Right.
So they knew this. But they decided, you know, they've been watching for a while. They were like, hey, let's go outside. Mm-hmm. Let's go take a walk. What? I'm not stupid. I was like, no. So they must have, I don't know if they planned it or what, but they must have thought, okay, this is a good place that we can maybe get away with whatever they were planning.
Right.
So one of them tries to start pulling my arm to go outside. I start fighting. I start saying, no, no. Now I'm yelling, no, no. And guys, there's people all around. Some people are watching a movie. Some people are playing basketball. Some people are in like a corner, like a big group of people just talking and laughing and playing jokes. And around all these people, I'm screaming, nobody's helping me. Mm-hmm. This is like when people are drowning right in front of people in a pool. Well, this is how it felt. I'm screaming. I'm starting to cry now because I know something is telling me, if you go outside, you may not come back.
Right.
Or if you come back, you won't be the same.
Right.
So I'm screaming. I'm hysterical. I'm crying. And one of them wants to shut me up now. So the one of them starts hitting me hard with the basketball. He is just really throwing the basketball at my face, at my shoulders, and they're still trying to drag me off. So now I'm hysterical. Finally, someone says, what's going on? And then they go, I don't know. And then they stomp off. I'm hysterical still.
Right.
And my friends are like, what's wrong? Now, one of my friends, it was her brother. So she was kind of like, everyone saw what happened. But she was kind of standoffish. And they were just kind of like, Rita, get over it. Like, stop crying. Mm-hmm. And then it became the talk. Because now what they did was they went to a corner and started telling their side of what was happening and how I just overreacted.
Right.
And I'm sitting there by myself now. And everybody at the church, they knew me. They knew I didn't do anything. They knew that I was not one of those types of girls. But yet, even with that knowledge, I was alone for most of the night after that.
Right.
My everyone friends saying, had ditched like, me. Everybody.
Why were you making such a big deal?
Yeah.
Rita?
What's wrong with you? I had people who were angry with me.
Right.
Angry with me. And the next morning I went home and my and this is before cell phones. Now, could I have, you know, called with the payphone? Yes, I could have. But there's something that happens to a young person when they kind of feel like, I don't know if I should say anything. Should I leave? Should I not? Should I not make this a big deal? You know what? Maybe I did make this a big deal.
Yeah, especially how everybody's telling you made a big deal.
I said, maybe I did. Oh, I don't know. So I just said, okay, I'm going to wait till the morning. Of course, I didn't sleep because I don't trust anybody. So I went back home the next morning and my mom says, hey, how was the lock-in? It was okay. She's like, what's wrong? I burst out crying. And I told her what happened. She immediately gets on the phone with the guy's parents. And I mean, it became a huge thing. And it was later, you know, dealt with at church between the parents. And mm-hmm. I never spoke to this guy again.
But there's several things that are quite disturbing. One of them is that while it was happening, I'm almost certain that people saw. But nobody felt comfortable to intervene. Like they're just like, oh, let's just let it, like nothing is going to happen. And at the time, you are panicking because nobody's doing anything. And mm-hmm. I think so many things happen because people stay silent when they see something.
Right.
And then the second thing that was disturbing was that when you shared your story or when the opportunity was there for you to share your story, nobody wanted to listen to you. Nobody wanted to hear. No one wants to believe that story. Mm-hmm. Everybody would love to believe the story that is not painted in a bad light, maybe because a sister, like you said, the sister was there. Maybe it's because her brother would look bad, or maybe a parent would be like, my child will look bad, so let's just sweep this under the table and handle this in another way. Or maybe the church would think, oh, we cannot have this sounding that this happened at
and
our
that's
church
the thing.
So everybody's trying to protect themselves and their own self-interest as opposed to protecting the person that's being victimized.
Even at the church, I mean, it was dealt with eventually, but we got a lot of pushback. Mm-hmm. And I remember being in the meeting with the parents, and the parents of the guy, oh, the mother said, well, we have it that she was trying to kick his private parts. And my dad was like, because she was trying to get away, and they were hitting her with a basketball, and then she was quiet. For her credit, later on, she apologized to me, the mm-hmm. mother, mm-hmm. and she made it a special point and effort to try to maintain a great relationship with me. You know, I still to this day, I still love and respect his mother because she, outside of this whole situation,
she handled it.
She's a really, really great person.
Right.
But I think that, you know, even with great people, you can make mistakes with what you say and you're sure. still trying to process everything.
Right.
So I never
while
held it against
her.
She
has to hear out her son for her, the fact right. that you could have, she could have let you felt like you were listened to.
Yeah.
And that she could have validated what you said. That's tremendous. And that's a great example of what needs to happen in mm-hmm. these kind of situations. So.
Yeah. I mean, and this is the thing, the signs were all leading up to this point. I had been harassed for years.
Right.
Talked about my body and just so many things. Mm-hmm. It was an event that had years in the making.
Mm-hmm.
And I thank God that nothing happened
sure.
because it would have changed everybody's life.
Absolutely.
Everybody.
And then you would have, I mean, at this point in time with that story, and when you watch something like this, like what goes through your mind when you watch something like Sharp Edges?
You know what? Unfortunately, and I'm just going to be really blunt and truthful here. I was raised by my grandmother and she's old school in some things. She listens to me. Don't get me wrong. She and I have a great relationship. She is my best friend. And we talk about a lot of things. But I think she might have been challenged, even in that particular situation, because of her generation, mm-hmm. to, had anything really happened, I think she would have believed me. I have no doubt she would have believed me.
But she might have been so upset.
Right.
That something happened.
Right. That I don't, and I can't fault her in the sense that she's old school in that, mm-hmm. and you know, in the way that she was raised.
Well, what do you think she would have done?
You know, part of me feels like she would have believed me, but she would have had some anger towards me, like, how could you get yourself in that situation? Mm. Not so like, you know, maybe I should have spoken up earlier. Maybe I should mm-hmm. have never gone to the lock-in. You know,
right,
like there's
right.
a million ways that I feel like she could have said, you could have avoided this.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I think nowadays we're all, you know, together saying, hey, when these things happen, you know, when someone was intent on hurting someone, mm-hmm. you know, you cannot blame the victim.
Because the victim doesn't have the foresight to know what was the intent of the person and what was going to happen.
Right.
So, yeah. Well, this is going to be a great a great movie. This is going to yeah. be a great show. It's just going to be full with all sorts of scenarios that we are going to be able to dissect and just really enjoy. So, I mean, I'm glad that we were able to share it with the audience. And, you know, if you are anything like me and Rita and you enjoy a really good drama where you can be exposed to, you know, other types of scenarios and different situations and that affect humanity, and that can, you could benefit from that. And I think that this is a good one to watch.
Definitely. So we're going to be tuning in and we're going to talk about it from time to time because it is a limited series. And we hope that, you know, that you guys enjoy it as well. Thanks for listening. Join us again Monday through Friday. Show notes are found at theonyxlife.com. Join our Facebook, The Onyx Life. Follow us on Twitter at The Onyx Life and on Instagram at The Onyx Life Official.
Now go live that Onyx Life where change comes with challenge. See you next time.